This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 1st of August, 2022, and markets still in a pretty good mood. We have financial conditions easing, as we'll get to, of course, but very happy to have one of my esteemed colleagues back on the show, Peter Garnery, our head of equity and quant strategy with us today. And Peter, you were remarking when you went on holiday 3 weeks ago that the markets, or at least financial conditions, were in a very different place. The markets to a degree as well. And we see that on slide two of the NASDAQ 100 teasing this 13,000 area. I'll get to a rundown on a couple of financial conditions at indicators in a moment. But you know, what's your take on just sort of, you know, coming back into this market where we are here?
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit bewildered, to say the least. That was definitely not my main expectation. So this is actually far from it. And as you alluded to, the financial condition index have improved quite dramatically. I'll let you talk about it. As you can see on slide two with the theme baskets, I mean, it's been a monster month. I mean, the S&P 500 is up 9.1% for July. That puts it into the top 20 since World War II in terms of monthly performances in terms of gains. And the big question here is there enough steam to carry on the momentum? We're sitting right at the 100-day moving average in the S&P 500. We're getting very close to the resistance area that we had in early June. I think we're getting into a very, very critical zone here. And we're not fully in agreement within the team. There are, you know, a couple of people are leaning towards the momentum can continue. I probably lean more on the mean reversion side. I mean, mean reversion is the most dominant effect in equities on higher frequencies. But of course, there can always be exceptions to the rule. But I suspect that there could be some selling coming in here. But there's a caveat, and we'll talk about it later, John, because the earnings have actually been quite strong for Q2 and margins are actually expanding. And before I finish, should mention, I mean, if you look at the themes, some of the things that have done really well, obviously, is one of the things that did very bad prior to July, and crypto, of course, being one of those that have rallied the most. But then I would highlight renewable energy and energy storage. And I think it's of course, financial condition easing, that's one thing. But the other thing is that the galloping energy crisis here in Europe is just putting, I would say, it's all hands on deck. We need to find energy fast in many different ways. And there is no one holy solution to this problem in Europe. And I'm still a little bit surprised. I don't know what you think about that, John, but I'm still surprised how slow the EU politicians are. I mean, I would almost be calling this a new Manhattan Project. Much more participation and aggressiveness from the government side, but I don't think it's happening actually.
It seems like it's only in the teeth of crisis that European politicians are able to do anything. If we recall back in the sovereign debt crisis, 2010 to 2012, there were so many times when there was only action when there was blood on the wall, if you will, with these sovereign spreads. It sort of forced incremental action, and then Draghi was able to, with the money printing and with the central bank moves, really able to save the day. Sort of bought them some time. This time, I think the political stakes are far higher, and this ECB has less of a role it can play because ECB can't print energy. So it's a really great point to make there. And you mentioned the Chicago Fed Financial Conditions Index, and I don't have that here. I have a couple of other indicators. This is just refreshing what I put up on Friday with the spreads on the Eurodollar forward interest rate contracts. So if you look at slide three, when I say Eurodollar, I mean the short-term interest rate futures for the three-month rate out into the future. And you can see that we are peaking around that December 1, the December 2022. So this year, 96.33 is the current contract. And then the market expecting the Fed to roll over and begin to cut fairly aggressively into the beginning of 2024. And that reached new wides very locally here, that spread because of, or despite, I should say, a very strong June PCE inflation print. And then you can see other things like the credit spreads indicating that the market really believes that this is going to be at least not a terrible landing or some kind of soft landing, because despite, if the Fed is supposedly rolling over, that should mean, okay, we're heading towards some kind of a lower inflation, maybe even a recession. But usually if we're have rising fears of an eventual recession. You would expect credit spreads to widen. They have come in and they came in further on Friday. So credit spreads tightening, the VIX just tumbling in almost vertical fashion to the downside below 22. It's really amazing that we managed to get as low as we did below 20 into the end of March. That was some of that was on market rebalancing. And we talked about that at the time. I think that's less of a factor now. But the market really did. And as I point out on that leftmost chart of when the sort of the expectations for the Fed peaked, it was right around that FOMC meeting when it was in June. And since then, that is when that is almost exactly when the market bottomed and has rallied. So but what we are seeing in general, this very insistence on data dependency, we're seeing a lot of intraday volatility in the dollar, especially over these data releases. So we saw it last week. And especially on Friday with the PCE indicator triggering a huge rally in the dollar before the market suddenly decides, well, you know what, maybe next week's data is more important or whatever the reason was. But in any case, those U.S. long yields heading back lower and the dollar going back lower as well. A very choppy session on Friday. It keeps the dollar yen pressure to the downside as those U.S. long rates have broken below the 2.7% level on the U.S. 10-year. I think that's a really key indicator to watch across markets for financial conditions and for the U.S. dollar itself. And we see that the dollar reading is in the FX trend board on slide four, edging quite further, quite a bit further into the negative, and the Chinese renminbi even more so. Very interesting there. I'll just continue on here, but the report out, it was a Bloomberg article this morning citing S&P Global and Deutsche Bank on this this Chinese mortgage situation where there's a widening number of boycotts. So mortgage holders, homeowners refusing to service their mortgages, essentially, with S&P Global estimating a worst case of 6.4% of these mortgages potentially not being serviced or defaulting, Deutsche Bank more like 7%. But that 6.4% level would be a $350 billion impact into the Chinese banking system. Very interesting setup there for China. And eventually, I would expect some of that to head into the currency as well. For dollar yen technicals, by the way, we're coming up on really key level, as you can see on the chart there on the left, getting into the 131.50 area, which was a prior major market high or near it at least, and a retest. And then we get into the Ichimoku cloud situation, a commonly used technical indicator where the bottom of the cloud is a key sort of trigger, often considered that for a new trend. So watching those levels, but watching the direction in the U.S. longer yields most certainly here. All right. Let's move on to, we have a busy earnings season, Peter. We had the busiest week of the season last week with Apple and Amazon and a whole slew of other companies reporting. What is your focus here as we're getting into this week? And we still have a pretty hot earnings calendar as well.
Yeah, we do, John. And if we start with the stocks to watch today, we have a couple of earnings coming in. We have HSBC surprising to the upside. Much stronger net revenue gains. So they are looking to reinstate their dividends as soon as possible. That should be doable. We also have on slide five, you can see the 5-year weekly chart. It's a pretty pretty solid gains there over the past year. Has been a little bit more chubby in the past 3 or 4 months though, but this was a fairly good report. I think the dark clouds hanging over HSBC, of course, is the two things. So they did say that loan provisions are expected to rise on their real estate portfolio. I think this is still the biggest uncertainty to the global economy, but also the banking system and the overall financial market, is to what extent these higher rates will have an impact on real estate. So in other words, now we are sort of relieved after July's performance in equities, but what if suddenly with the lag, the cracks in the real estate market begins to unwound? And then they also say that China is relatively the weakest spot inside its portfolio, and that goes to what you just said, John. And I think on many fronts, there's a big readjustments. There are big readjustments going on in China. It's a very difficult situation. I read a couple of interesting perspectives while I was on vacation. People talk a lot about this managed credit fuel growth, a lot of infrastructure that happened in Japan. It was very difficult for the Japanese economy and the governments to sort of, you know, move beyond this initial phase of a very, very, very heavy investment-driven growth, and China might be finding itself in some of the same issues as Japan did. and the demographics dynamics are extremely bad as well. So a lot on the table for China there. And then Heineken has reported earnings this morning, better than expected organic growth. The big question is to what extent. I haven't dived enough into the numbers to see whether it's driven by price gains or it's actually driven by volume. I suspect it's prices. So in other words, analyst estimates. Again, I'm not really good at capturing these upside pressures on inflation. But in any case, better than expected on organic revenue growth. And to say the least, breweries probably are the best staple within the staples, the consumer staples sector. So a good one there for Heineken. And then Alibaba over the weekend was added to the SEC's list of firms that could be facing a delisting. Alibaba has been a company you and I, John, have talked a lot about. It's a fascinating, very complex. It's the way it's intertwined in the Chinese equity markets, its expansion into US equity markets, the whole thing. And now it might be coming to an end. And the company is also reporting on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. It's on slide 6 where you can see the calendar. Yep. So Alibaba is reporting on Thursday. I've highlighted a lot of earnings in red. The overall theme I'll be focusing on this week is German industry and German companies in general. I mean, can they remain upbeat given the energy crisis with electricity price and natural gas price at 10 times above the historical average, at least according to the past decade? That's the big question mark. We'll be looking at that. Tomorrow we have very, very interesting earnings from Caterpillar, given their footprint in Asia and specifically in China. And then I've put in a chart here, John, where you can actually see the rebound so far on earnings per shares. I mean, it's pretty dramatic. Tomorrow, I'll put in a chart as well from the same slide deck I have or a spreadsheet where you can see the margin expansion. So companies cutting costs in Q1 have really provided some tailwind here for earnings. So that is the key driver combined with the easing of financial conditions for equities right now.
All right. We will follow up on that as the week progresses, of course. And we also have this week, we have no real schedule or specific itinerary from Pelosi's visit to Asia, the House Speaker of the U.S., and an entourage of other, I believe, House members. Supposedly Taiwan, not at all in the itinerary, but some say that wouldn't have been pre-announced anyway if she was planning to go there. And of course, this drum beating or almost chest thumping, if you will, on what the Chinese side would do if she were to go to Taiwan. So I'm not sure. I assume this is about a 1 week tour of those four key Asian countries. That was Singapore, Malaysia, Japan, etc. So let's see what's going on there. Our assumption is that the threat is worse than the actual outcomes would be, but both sides playing a pretty dangerous game of chicken, because if she doesn't go, it looks like it's because China was successful in scaring her away. And if she does go, then it's potentially brings some further shenanigans or risk of a dangerous confrontation. So just have it on your radar. In other words, in terms of the economic calendar, we have a very busy week ahead. It's the classic first week of the month calendar with the ISM manufacturing from the US up today. The preliminary S&P global manufacturing PMI, the other survey, was out. Just a slight deceleration, still in expansion, but a slight deceleration to 52. The ISM today will be interesting, but I think it's more the ISM services up on Wednesday after that preliminary S&P global number was actually in theoretically in recession or below 50. We'll see what that has to say, but as well, the Friday jobs report and, you know, non-farm payrolls are a very statistically manipulated and unreliable number, but just interested to get those average hourly earnings component a bit more so. But still, you'll see a lot of reaction to the non-farm payrolls, no doubt, because we have this Fed that has set itself up for reacting to the data in terms of what its next decision will be. And then another one to pull out is that JOLTS job openings up tomorrow out of the U.S. This one has just been, it's softened a little bit, but it's still what were prior to this cycle, record numbers of job openings. And I just had an idle thought, and I've not been able to find any supporting evidence for this, but we are in a summer period. People maybe at the lower end of the income spectrum, allowing themselves to get fired and being on benefits for a few weeks, knowing that the jobs market is white hot and maybe they can bid up their services in a couple of months when summer's over. Just a random thought there. Let's see if that's the case. It would certainly square better with this crazy situation where we have endless job openings, whereas claims have been ticking up. It's a strange combination there. And then tonight, the Australian RBA is meeting, and they're expected to hike by 50 basis points, with a small minority looking for either a smaller hike, or another minority looking for a slightly larger hike. I think it would be out of sync with what's going on and the deceleration of general expectations for them to do anything except sort of meet the 50 basis points expectations, but potential for surprise there. And then we have the Bank of England out later this week, also expected with a 50 basis point move. And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to it. And for now, let's see how high this, whether it's a short squeeze, a bull trap, or the real deal. Let's see how far this equity market rally can go. And we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.